are together once again, together in all kinds of things, together in truth. That's the title of the message this morning. Why don't we read the passage together? It's going to be on the screen. We're in Matthew chapter 5, beginning with verse 33. I'll just turn around and we can read it together. Are we ready? Let's read it together. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, you shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. Jesus is on a roll. We are in the Sermon on the Mount, and we have been saying that he's in the midst of giving seven commandments, commenting on Old Testament commandments, Old Testament teaching, giving some commandments of his own, but seven of them. And we said a few weeks ago, it's sort of like one commandment for every day of the week. And so the very first one, right after Easter, the Sunday command, if you will, was take the Bible seriously. And then the Monday command was take anger seriously. We parked in that passage for about 3 weeks. Your own anger, somebody else's anger, doesn't matter. Be reconciled with one another. And then the Tuesday command, take sexual boundaries seriously. Take drastic measures with yourself to prevent yourself from committing sexual sin, beginning with the thoughts in your own heart and mind, crossing those boundaries in your imaginations. And then last week, the Wednesday commandment was take marriage seriously. This morning, take your word seriously. I wish I would have more in my life so far. I wish I would have been up to this point a 100% follow-through person, always taking my word seriously, always keeping my word. I guess that's been a bit of a casualty at certain times and certain events of my life, and I would imagine you all can relate to that. Speaking of a casualty, in time of war, there is one great casualty that precedes even the very first human life casualty. Some of you know where this is going. The Greek playwright Aeschylus in the 5th, 6th century BC is the one who said that the very first casualty of war is the truth. Exaggeration, denial, suppression of the truth, twisting of the truth, spinning things to your advantage, lying, exaggeration, as I said, propaganda, misuse and manipulation of words, fake news. All this becomes the first weapon of war, so that the truth about anything and thus about everything becomes the first casualty. And the same can be said, if you haven't already connected the dots, the same can be said in an election year. We saw that last year, and it just continues. I mean, look at last week. Who's telling the truth? This morning, Jesus is deeply interested in his troops, that is, his church, being people of the truth, people of their word. And he's saying in so many words, if you want to be a part of me and be with me and do the things that I'm doing, then you must be truthful. You must be people of your word. You must take your own word seriously. So let's look at the passage again, verse 33. It's going to be on the screen. He says, again, you've heard that it was said to those of ancient times. That's his introductory formula for a lot of his teaching in this section. But again, like last week, Jesus is not quoting an Old Testament passage per se. But he's also not quoting the Pharisees like he was last week. This morning he's combining and paraphrasing some Old Testament teaching. There are two parts to it. The first part, you shall not swear falsely. The second part, he says, but carry out the vows that you've made to the Lord. And he's referring to any kind of a statement that asserts what did or did not happen, or a statement that asserts what you will or will not do. So what happened in the past, and then what's going to happen in the future? Whatever's coming out of your mouth related to those two things. And then strengthening your statement by swearing an oath to or swearing an oath on something of great value, something of honor, something of authority, typically connected to God. And if it were me doing that with you right now, I would do this in order for me to convince you and to get you to trust me, to cooperate with me so I can get what I want out of you, typically. I swear to God. Or I swear on a stack of Bibles. I swear on my mother's grave. I swear as God is my witness that what I'm about to say is true, that what I promise to do, I will do. And what's implied is with those words, if I'm not telling the truth, if I don't do it, may the God of those Bibles strike me down. Or let my mother, whom I will have dishonored, be witness against me on that great judgment day as I stand before the throne of God. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. They leave that out from time to time in courtrooms these days. But in other words, may God in his wrath have mercy on me if I don't tell the truth. And when you say things like that, well, people say, well, he must be telling the truth. I guess I better listen and maybe buy what he's selling, accept what he's saying. More background on this. Remember last week, the Pharisees, who aren't all bad. I mean, some of them actually became disciples of Jesus, but some of them are kind of bad characters. They twisted the Old Testament law. They were the ones who really knew the Bible well. Sometimes people who know the Bible super well aren't necessarily good people. Now, I don't want to discourage you from learning the Scripture with that. Don't use that as an excuse. I mean, it's hard to actually run across a mature Christian who doesn't have some grasp of the Scriptures. But at any rate, these Pharisees, remember, they were twisting the Old Testament law in order to permit men to divorce their wives for any reason. That was the big controversy last week, and Jesus is totally against that. And again, they've twisted the law on this topic by setting up levels of truth-telling. Now, we actually have that ourselves. We have lies, and then we have white lies, right? And then we have a fib. So a fib isn't as bad as a white lie, and a white lie is not as bad as a lie. I mean, James Comey didn't say the president told a fib in his office. He was asserting something more serious than that. We have levels of truth-telling. But this is how it worked 2,000 years ago in the situation Jesus is speaking into. You'd make a statement, you'd be asserting a truth, promise you'd do something or would not do something, and then you'd back it up by swearing an oath to an object connected, and this is the fun part, it's connected to something, and the degree to which you would be held accountable for the statement or the vow that you were making depended on the value or the weight of the object that you were swearing an oath to or on. So the more valuable the object, the more truthful you had to be. So here's the illustration. We actually find it later on in the book of Matthew, chapter 23. Jesus confronts the Pharisees directly on this. They were saying, if you swear by the temple in Jerusalem, in certain matters, you weren't necessarily bound, but if you swore by the gold on the temple, you were bound. And Jesus, he's not trying to win friends here, he calls them blind fools, and he says, you're greedy and you're corrupt, the system doesn't even make sense. He says, what's greater, the gold or the temple that makes the gold sacred? Come on. And Jesus this morning in the Sermon on the Mount is announcing, enough. He says, you've heard it said, you shall not swear falsely, etc. But I say to you, this is his own authoritative teaching now, verse 34, I say to you, do not swear at all. No more swearing, no more oath making, no more propping up your word, no more hedging on the truth with your little tricks. And he gives reasons, and there are two of them. The first one is essentially, to do that is proud and arrogant. Verse 34, Jesus says, don't swear by heaven, that's the throne of God. And don't swear by earth, that's his footstool, as it were. And don't swear by Jerusalem, that's the city of the great king who happens to be God. To sum it up, you don't own these things, God owns them. You don't control these things, God controls them. You are not the great king, God is the great king. So don't swear by them. Who do you think you are, God? And again, verse 36, just marching through his teaching here, he says, don't swear by your head. You do sort of own that, but you don't control it. I mean, you cannot make one itsy-bitsy hair black or white. You may wish that you could. You might pull it off for a time with a little dye, a little Grecian formula. But then, you know, if your hair falls out, what do you do? I've asked myself that on occasion. God made your head. God made your hair, controls it. So don't swear by that either. And again, who do you think you are? Every time you swear an oath like that, you're presuming that you've got God on a chain, on a little string, and that he's going to perform his little role that you've given him for judgment or blessing according to the little formula that you set up in your cute little oath. So Jesus says, don't swear by anyone or anything. That's proud, that's arrogant of you. God either owns and or controls. You're not God. And not only is it proud or arrogant, but second reason, it's really not necessary. Verse 37, he says, just let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Be people whose yes means yes, and whose no means no, so that you won't need to swear an oath, because everybody will hear your word and accept your word and believe your word and count on your word because they know that you're a person of your word, that you take your word seriously and them seriously. There's only one statement that ought to come out of your mouth, that is, if you're a disciple of Jesus Christ, and it's a truthful word and a trustworthy word that doesn't need help, doesn't need some kind of buttressing or support. And you know something? When our country has really been at its best, it's been when our country is a country of its word. And you can count on a handshake and an agreement and that somebody's going to follow through. That's a higher level of the rule of law providing order where everyone thrives. You can trust. You don't have a community without that kind of trust. Why don't we keep our word? Well, some of us just aren't all that organized. So, you know, we overpromise and underdeliver. Anybody relate to that? And maybe some of us just don't really honor other people all that much or even honor ourselves. And so we don't follow through. We don't tell the truth if it works for us. And some of us don't really keep our word because we actually say what we think people want to hear, want to keep them happy, keep them pleased with us. We want them to like us. Any people pleasers in the house this morning? So you say yes when you actually should say no, and then you can't live with your yes, and so you back out of it. I mean, you know, when I was in university at Westmont College in Santa Barbara, some of us would go out to University of California, Santa Barbara, and just participate in some student Christian groups out there. And I went with some friends, and we were in one group some, and the leader learned that I played the guitar. I do play the guitar, but you're not going to see me up here playing the guitar, don't worry. So he learned that. He said, well, would you be interested in leading songs next week? I said, inside I said, no, but outside I said, yeah. Of course, all week long I was just dreading this. I just didn't want to do it. And then, you know, I call Friday afternoon, Friday night's the meeting, you know, hey, John, I just can't make it. I did that a couple times. He really got mad at me. But it was because I didn't honor him. I didn't really honor myself. I was trying to make him happy, but I didn't want to live with it. And, you know, you just get in all kinds of trouble. Not being a person of your word. Nian Cheng. Some of you may recognize that name. She was a young, educated Chinese woman, spoke English fluently. She went to work for Shell Chemical Company in Shanghai in the 1950s. And like many who were working for Western companies, corporations in those years, ultimately she was accused of spying. She was arrested. She was called on to confess her crime in return for some leniency. Well, the accusations, as they often were completely bogus. She was innocent. And she said no. She refused to be dishonest. She insisted on being a person of the truth. You can read all about that in her fascinating autobiography, Life and Death in Shanghai. She was interrogated, she was threatened, she was publicly humiliated, she was put in prison for 13 years and finally released, but she never went back on her claim of innocence. She never stood up and said, "Yeah, I'm guilty." She figured that being a woman of truth was more important than her own comfort, and she stuck with it. And Jesus this morning says, you know, I want disciples like that. That's what I want. Psalm chapter 15 is an entrance liturgy into temple worship, and the beginning of it begins with, you know, who is essentially worthy of coming into the temple to worship. And then there's a list of character qualities, and one of them is, in verse 4, those who keep their word to their own hurt. They keep their word even if the consequence is going to cost them. They still keep it. Jesus says, I want disciples like that. My dad was super honest. You ask him what time it was, he'd tell you. And filling out his tax returns, no matter how much it hurt, he was completely honest and truthful on those. And you know, Jesus says, I want disciples who are like that. Those are the people who can be a part of what I'm doing. You can come up with lots of other examples. Telling the truth at work, telling the truth at school, no matter what the cost. Sticking with what you say. People will begin to depend on you. You become a person of influence just by being a follow-through person. Well, there's a final question here, and that is, what about Christians taking oaths? Some Christian groups don't allow their members to take oaths for public office or for another position or maybe serving as a witness in a court of law. And I think Jesus' own life provides an example for us here. It's actually also in the book of Matthew, chapter 26. He's in the middle of a shotgun trial. He's the subject of it. The high priest says, I put you under oath before the living God. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God. And Jesus cooperates with that. He answers, he says, you have said so. He doesn't say, I'm sorry, I can't answer because you're putting me under oath. He just gives an answer. And I believe Jesus would teach his church that when others in authority place us under oath, we can cooperate, answer like Jesus, simply, truthfully, directly. Taking an oath, I think, is permissible. Making an oath, initiating an oath, that's proud, that's arrogant, that is unnecessary, and Jesus doesn't want us doing that. So back to you and to your word, are you taking your word seriously in your life? Are you keeping your promises? If you say you're going to be there at 3, are you there at 3 or not? If you say you're going to pay the money back, do you pay the money back? If you tell your child you're going to do X, Y, and Z with him or her, do you follow through? If you tell your child you better do X, Y, and Z, or I'm going to do A, B, and C to you, do you follow through? When you speak, Do people listen and take you seriously because they know that your yes means yes and your no means no? This morning, Jesus says, I want my people to be men and women of their word. Now, I have some homework for you. It wouldn't be right without giving you some homework, right? And on the screen, we have a question, a couple questions. Number one, or two of them, is there an unkept promise I have made? Just ask yourself that. Or is there a mistruth that I have spoken that I need to make right? Again, the warning here is, don't be just hearers of the word, be doers of it as well. This is the brother of the Lord, James, in his letter. He says that to Jesus' people. So those questions, is there an unkept promise I've made? Is there a mistruth I've spoken? And then here's the action. Number three things you can do. All three things. Number one, I want you to ask God, help me follow through or make things right regarding whatever came to mind. Number two, if needed, and I encourage you to do this, ask a friend to pray for you as you act, and also to ask you how it went after you do the third thing, which is take whatever action it is. So ask God, help me to follow through or make the thing right. Number two, get somebody else involved to support you, but also to hold you accountable, because if you haven't done it by now, it must not be an easy thing to do. And then number three, do it. You know, the principle really is step into places where you need God. And when you do that, it's uncomfortable, but God shows up. And then Christianity gets interesting and real and not just talk. And actually, then you want more of it.